I just finished recording an episode with Andrei Minkov. Andrei is the founder and owner of Trademark Factory. And what they do, as the name says it, they trademark businesses and names and logos and everything that comes with it for business owners, entrepreneurs. This conversation was so valuable to me. I really enjoyed it because there were so many things that I wanted to find out myself. And I also know that our listeners and our audience is interesting in learning more about it, because trademark is such an important thing to have and to be protected, but also something that is really neglected. Because when we entrepreneurs get started, the last thing we usually think about is the trademark, you know, but it is very essential, because you don't want to start building a business that you basically do not own. So I really enjoyed that conversation. As always, please give us a like, subscribe to the show wherever you listen or watch it, either on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because we don't run ads, we don't have any outside investors, and the only way or one way that you can support us is by sharing it with others and subscribing to the show. So let's dive into this conversation, and I hope you guys enjoy. Welcome to the Immigrant Entrepreneurs Show, where our mission is to inspire, influence, and impact other immigrant entrepreneurs to follow their dreams and create the future they want. My guest today is Andrei Minkov, the founder and CEO of Trademark Factory. Andrei, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ali. Good to be here.
Absolutely. As I told you just off camera, I'm really excited for this interview because there are tons of questions that I'm interested myself to find out. And so I'm glad I have an expert on the show today to ask all these questions. But before we get there, tell us a little bit about where you are right now, and then we will get into the story how you got there.
Yeah, sure. Right now I'm in Dubai. I moved here 2022, this is my main base, and I do a bunch of traveling in the summer when it gets too hot here. Like, I did 11 countries in 4 months in 2023. That's, you know, we still haven't finalized the plans for what we're going to do this summer, but we're gonna go somewhere as well, for sure.
That's awesome. So your name doesn't sound Arabic.
You don't
even look. So where were you born, and what was your journey till you got to Dubai?
Okay. Well, you can probably hear it in my accent when I talk. I'm Russian. And this is where I was born and lived most of my life, really, until it was 07 when I moved to Canada, and then I moved to Dubai, and it was very different two moves in terms of what I was hoping for, what I was expecting out of that move. So the first move to Canada was, as I mentioned, in 07. And I had a career as an IP lawyer there. I was with the biggest law firm in the world, doing the work for some of the biggest clients you can think of, like, you know, Apple, Microsoft, DreamWorks, J.K. Rowling, like all those big names. Mm-hmm. So you told me not to talk about politics, so I won't go there. But in 07, I realized that I had enough of Russia and that I wanted to go to a country that's more about free market, that's more about freedom, that's more about entrepreneurship, that's more about respect of the individual's rights. And so it was hard, and it still is hard to move to US. So I found what I thought was second best, Canada. And I went there assuming that it would be my springboard to go to the US, but for several reasons I got stuck in Canada for 15 years. Initially, that was great. You know, I went straight back to law school and my second law school there, did my second law school, didn't get any offers, even though I finished top of my class to join any of Canadian law firms. So I started my own law firm, which I then transformed to be Trademark Factory. You know, we can talk about that in, you know, if you want after. But so I did that. I was running from there. So I caught my entrepreneurial bug in Canada and switched from being a lawyer to being the owner of a company that does law for people. And then during COVID, I realized that I had enough of Canada. And I really got enough of pretty much any government telling me how to live, what to do, where I can go, what I should do. I moved to Dubai. And even though, you know, from a lot of angles, Dubai may be more restrictive than, I don't know, some other countries, but not being the citizen and being here because I choose to be here and I can go somewhere else when I want to, that was a big game changer. So, you know, now I'm here, I'm loving it here, but the second I realize that it's no longer, you know, as nice as I'd like, I'm just going to find a different place. And just, you know, going back to the idea that the reasons in my head were totally different when I moved to Canada, when I moved to Dubai, very true. Because initially, back that first big move to me was trying to find a perfect place on earth and just put all my eggs in one basket. And the idea was, you know what, if not me, my children are going to be happier here. Now I'm like, I don't know what's better for me long term. I know even less about what's better for my kids long term. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose what's better for me now. And I'm going to ask myself this question on a regular basis. Is it still the best place for me to be? There's this guy, I did an interview with him in 2016. He was just starting out, Andrew Anderson of Nomad Capitalist. He's got this great tagline, go where you're treated best, right? And I'm like, is this still where I'm treated best? Is this still where they want me, where they still want my money, where they still want my family? And for as long as the answer is yes, I like being here, but I'm always open to other possibilities.
Thanks for sharing. By the way, without getting into politics, I can totally relate and resonate with what you said, being, you know, growing up in a country that pretty much tells you what to do and what not to do and limits you in your freedom. I was born in Iran, okay? And growing up as a child, I also realized that they tell you so much to, you know, you have limits. You have limits that the government tells you you can move within these limits. And these limits are far away from the limits that are set somewhere else outside of these countries, you know. So I can totally relate to that, what you just said, you know, that seeking freedom. It's basically nothing else than seeking freedom and doing what you want to do without stepping over into other people's rights, but deciding for yourself and your life what you want to do and what you don't want you to do without someone dictating to you what is right and what is wrong. So totally on the same page. And yeah, I get it. Awesome. Okay, so I would like to also know what it means, like, you know, I believe you work with lots of different kinds of individuals all over the world, different time zones. And what does it look like? Do you have a schedule that you say, okay, this is the hours I work on during the day, regardless of the time zone of my clients? Or are you always hopping in and out whenever you get something going on?
Okay. Well, first of all, all my life I had a schedule when I would go to bed really late, and I would wake up during reasonable times. So I like my life goal is to go to bed by 3 a.m. Like, and it's hard because I usually, my preference is to take it even further down the night. And I normally wake up around 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. So my most commonly used alarm on my phone is 9:45. Mm-hmm. That kind of works for me. Like, I got the team who's everywhere. Like, we got a lot of people in the US. We got a lot of people in the Philippines. We got some people in between. We got people in Serbia. We got people in Indonesia, like all sorts of places. Mm-hmm. And I built the company so that it doesn't require my constant, mm-hmm. Attention. I get on calls, I get on meetings, but I feel safe enough for them to take care of the things when, I'm not available. Like in March, I'm going to Austria for a no phone retreat for a month, a week, right? I'll have no access to the phone. Mm. And they all know it. So they'll have to figure out how to do things while, I'm not available. So it works. Mm-hmm. We took virtual firm to the level where that's the default for us. It's normal. But I do have calls later at night. I do have calls in the morning, but it's very flexible. Mm-hmm. I love my life from the perspective of, we had also off the phone today, we discussed, I said I had a 4-hour call. Well, that 4-hour call, I was on the walk, I was just walking around Dubai, having this nice sun. Mm-hmm. We had a 4-hour call with my team. So it's both work and enjoyment. And I love it. I love it.
So it's basically a lifestyle that you have built for yourself and you have designed for yourself. But I guess it didn't get, by the way, I was also in 2018, I was in retreat a week without my phone. And man, I tell you, that changed my life. That changed my life, especially when I came back. The focus I had, I was so laser focused on what I wanted, what I didn't wanted, all the noise. And another interesting thing that happened is when I turned on my phone, the moment I landed in Switzerland, I turned on my phone, and then it was interesting for me to see all the emails that I got, So you get an email first, hey, we need this, we need that. It's really urgent. And then a few hours go by, we think we have a solution to that. And then a few hours go by, we solved it. Don't worry about it, That was so interesting for me to see that things that other people, your team that works with you might think, the world is going under. They actually realize, no, we can fix it. We can find a solution to that.
Yeah, so I did a similar thing, maybe 7 years ago, something like that. I'm not exactly sure about the years, but initially you think you can't survive without the phone. Like, people need you. You need people. And then you realize that you only need your phone and always be online when you don't have anything else to do during the day. When you're so bored and so unfocused that the phone kind of gives you the ability to go from 1 minute to the next. When you got your schedule packed with stuff to do, you can easily go without phone. But it's easy for me to preach that, hey, don't use it. Like, I'm still stuck to this thing. Mm-hmm. when I'm back. But there are a few tricks that I employ to make it a little better. First of all, I don't check email ever. I have my assistants to do that. Like we've got, I think I have 24 inboxes. Wow. And one of them got 1,300 messages yesterday. And so I don't see any of that. So she goes through them, and I have one email address that nobody knows. And I change that, you know, when somehow scammers find out about it. And so the only emails that get there are the emails that I need to respond to ASAP. There's, I don't know, maybe five of them a day at most. Everything else, I don't see it. My phone is always on mute. I never get, like, if that's the first thing, right, that happens, I just put this thing on mute and put the battery on low power mode. It allows me to not get as distracted as I would have if I was open to all of this.
Right. So one thing that, again, my own interest, how does your assistant define what is or what are the emails that she needs or he needs to forward to you? And what are less important things that they can take care of? Did you train them?
Yeah, we train them. We have a document that explains how to treat this and this and this and this. Some of the emails that come in, they're good emails, but I'm not necessarily the person who should be responding. Like, we got an email from someone, hey, you know, I'm very interested in registering a trademark. Can you help me? We obviously don't want to miss that email, but Andre shouldn't be the one responding, right? So what she does is she sends that email to the strategy advisors, right? The sales team, who say, hey, Bob, great, you know, gotcha. You know, Andre forwarded me your email. Yes, we can help you trademark your brand. Let's get on a call, right? And, you know, they take care of the client. So I never see that email. Right. If there's an email, like I'm subscribed to a million different things, of course, and some of them voluntarily, some of them not. like if there's good marketing advice, right? They say, hey, you know, we put out this or this and go check it out. She'd go check it out. And if she thinks that it's relevant to us at where we are at our point, should forward that email to the director of marketing, right? So things like that. It takes practice. It takes a system, and we've built that. Is it perfect? No, but I'd rather, you know, miss an email or two than be bombarded and have zero focus ever. Because
I love,
as you said, if they really want to greet you, they will.
I love that. And it also, I believe it also takes a lot of discipline for you when you get started, build the system, to trust the system and not go see, oh, okay, let me see if they did that thing right. And let me still go check the emails that they're checking.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right, let's get into the legal stuff. By the way, guys, we're not giving legal advice. We're just discussing between Andrea and myself. So one thing that I always want to know is, when is the right time for a business owner, for an entrepreneur, to think about even trademark? You know, when is it too early? When is it too late? So I would love to hear your opinion on that.
Yeah, we actually have a saying, it's never too early, but it's often too late. Because like I drew a chart about a month ago, and it's funny because I'm you know how you always fall in love with this idea or that idea. So that's the idea that I'm still in love with that gets expressed in that chart. I'm gonna explain what it is. So the moment you come up with your brain or with your brand, right? There's a moment you think, oh, that's the name. That's the name, or that's the logo, or that's the tagline. Right. At that moment, the value of that brand is zero because nobody knows about it but you. All it has is just the potential. Right. assuming that you think that your business is going to be around for a long time, for, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, million years, right? Assuming that you're playing long term, because if you're not, then you really don't need a trademark, because the process is so long that by the time you get your trademark, your business is not going to be around. So assuming it's a long term game, so you came up with that name, it's value zero, but it's also the most trademarkable it will ever be, because and it might not be trademarkable, because you may have come up with a name that's already trademarked by somebody else. Happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Or you came up with a name that's generic, or you came up with a name that's merely descriptive, or that's not, you know, inherently distinct. Like, there's like, I don't want to throw those legal jargon terms mm-hmm. at you or the audience, but there are reasons why your brand might not be trademarkable, but it will never be more trademarkable than on the day when you just came up with it, right? And so from there, as you do something to build that brand, to get people to know about it, right? Whether you build a website, put together a landing page, start social media profiles, maybe start an LLC, incorporate a company, go to trade shows, go to networking, like you do a million things. And you say, hey, you know, I'm Bobby and I'm the founder of ABC Rainbows and Lollipops, and we do this and we do that. So you go out there trying to get more people to find out about you, to learn about you and remember you and maybe buy from you. So as you do that, the value of your brand goes up mm-hmm. because more people know about mm-hmm. you, and assuming that you're doing something good, not evil, you know, you get customers, you get repeat customers, you get good reviews, you get this and that. So the value goes up and registrability goes down, because with more people who know about you, there is higher risk that someone else will go ahead and trademark your brand mm-hmm. Or something similar. And so the ideal point in time is to do it, you know, the second you come up with it. Obviously, mm-hmm. that's when people are not interested in your brand. They don't know about it. And if it's trademarkable, that's the easiest and safest bet. And then as the road goes, then it gets harder and harder and harder and harder. And at some point, this gap is so big that it's almost certain that someone will snatch that trademark out of your hands and trademark it. And then you have to go back to the drawing board and start everything again. So, in practical terms, I mean, there are so many startups that do it right this time. My favorite one is Bird, that electric scooter company, mm-hmm, right? They filed their trademark less than 2 weeks after they made the decision to start the company. Mm. That was the first thing they did. Right? Wow. By the way, they're the fastest company to reach $1 billion valuation, or were a couple of years ago. Like they got there really quickly, and they realized that, hey, if we want to be successful, we need mm-hmm. to own the brand that we're building, mm-hmm. and there's no other way to do it than by trademarking the brand. Mm-hmm. And so they did it, like I said, less than 2 weeks after they started and before they launched. Right? It's not that they did it 2 weeks after they launched to the world. No. They came up with the idea, they set up the company, they started, you know, hiring people, and they filed the trademark. To them, it was a necessary evil, necessary investment. They had no idea if it's going to work or not. But they knew that if they wanted this to work, they needed to do a checklist of things for it to work. And mm-hmm. trademark was one of them. So, you know, and I understand there's a lot of entrepreneurs who may not be as determined to build a $1 billion company. I get that. Right. But even then, there comes a point when an entrepreneur says to himself, you know what? This is actually a business. It's not a hobby. It's mm-hmm. not a hustle. It's something that I'm spending all of my day on trying to get it to work. This is my primary source of revenue. And if they're still not doing what is right for the business, then it's just crazy to me, because trademarks are not that difficult. They're not that expensive to get them right. And when they say, yeah, well, who's going to steal my brand? I don't know. Well, it's kind of not treating your business seriously. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but here's the thing, you know, and I have trademarked businesses before, so I know a little bit about that. But here's the thing, the question we entrepreneurs always ask ourselves, or those who think about it, you know, you can obviously trademark a logo, you can trademark a brand, you can trademark a tagline, and so on and so forth. When somebody starts thinking about trademark, what is the right thing to trademark? Let's say for someone who got started, they have some traction, business is not just an idea, they have executed on it, they have some momentum on it, but they're still not a $1 million company nor a $1 billion company. So what is a good starting point for them to start with one trademark, maybe in one or two categories, and then move from there?
Yeah. So the priority should always be given to the name, brand name, the main brand name. So there's really five things that you can trademark. I mean, there's more, but five main ones. Mm-hmm. You can trademark the name of the business. You can trademark the name of your product, like a physical product, like name of the business, McDonald's, name of a product, Big Mac, mm-hmm. or iPad. Right. Again, right. Name of the service, if you're selling services like iTunes or Mac Cafe for McDonald's. Number four would be your logo. Mm-hmm. Right. We all know the logos. And number five is taglines. Mm-hmm. Whether it's I'm loving it, or Apple used to be Think Different, not anymore, but just do it for Nike. And so I would always give priority to the name, the question, and sometimes the name of the company and the name of the product is the same thing. Mm-hmm. And usually when you're starting small, that's how it is. That name would be the one I would give priority to. The first thing to do is to get a proper trademark search, just to confirm that the name you came up with can be owned, that it's not someone else's, because there's no reason in the world to spend a minute of your life or a dollar out of your pocket building a brand that's not yours, but building a brand that can't be yours, because every moment and every dollar you spend, you spend building someone else's brand. It's just bad strategy, and so that would be the very first thing I would do. Like you come up with a name, great. You can do your first initial dirty search and see if there's something like this already. If you find it, good. Like you don't need a professional search. But
where do people search? Where do people search?
So you can search on USPTO's website. You can search, like there are websites where you can do a fast, quick, and dirty search, right? But don't rely on them. On these searches for something serious, because it's the way they give you information, the way you can search is probably not good enough. So if you did find something that's very close to you, great, right? Basically, you just dodged the bullet, go back to the drawing board, come up with something else. If you didn't find anything, then get someone like us, or someone who's done thousands of those searches to do it for you. And not just give you a report like, hey, there's a list of 39 trademarks that are somewhat close. You go and figure out whether it's safe for you to move forward. No, actually have them say, we think it's good or we think it's not good. That would be the very first thing I do, because running with a brand that you don't even know that can be used and can be yours is dangerous, because nobody's going to go after you when you're not making any money. But the second you start making money, they will. Because they're going to have a lineup of lawyers mm-hmm. offering them to take you down on contingency basis,
right.
Which means that they don't have to pay lawyers by the hour because the defendant who's going to lose the case will. Mm-hmm. If you have revenue, if you have deep pockets and you have stolen someone's brand, it's an easy win for them. So it's dangerous to do that without, you know, doing a proper search. It's stupid to know that the brand is available. Let me rephrase it. It's reckless.
Mm-hmm.
It's reckless to know that you can have that brand, that you can own that brand, for you to continue investing in building that brand without taking steps to own mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, without a trademark, you don't legally own your brand.
Right.
It's not like the way I say it, it's not even a brand. You don't even have a brand. It's a word, a phrase, an image that you want to be your brand, but it doesn't become your brand until you can legally stop others
mm-hmm.
from using that word, image, or phrase to sell their products, right? If you can't mm-hmm. send them a demand letter saying, hey, this is mine, you can't do that. Stop this or else.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is not a brand. This is something that you, that's a dream. That's what you want to be your brand. But
right.
if they're going to tell you, and who are you, by the way, you know, why should we listen to you? Why should we stop? It's not a brand.
Right. And you know, when I'm listening to you, I because there are so many people that say, yeah, let me see if, you know, what happens with this. So, but here's the catch. If someone is not confident enough in their business and in their brand and in what they're building to go and register their trademark, they don't believe in their business.
1,000,000%.
You know?
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you do it? If you believe that this is going to be a huge success, you know, then of course you would have to go and trademark it.
And you do it for multiple reasons, for multiple audiences. Right. You do it for your competitors to know that you're serious about this,
mm-hmm.
that you're here for long term. You do it for your clients. You do it for investors. Because when investors think about investing in you, they do this thing called due diligence report. And it has a big section about your intellectual property. I've been a part of putting together a few of them, and lawyers look at everything. Like, is the brand protected? How are their license agreements with the stuff that they're using and they're letting other people use? What about their copyrights, their patents, like all of that stuff? And if the conclusion in that due diligence report that this thing has more holes than Swiss cheese, investors say, great, thank you, because they just have a valid reason to slash that valuation that they're going to offer you by a few zeros,
mm-hmm.
because they know that now they're buying something that has a lot of risks.
Mm-hmm.
They're buying something that's not secure, that's going to take a long time to secure if they can, and mm-hmm. they don't even know if they can at this point. So they might be buying a company with a brand that might not be even theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment they announce that, hey, you know, we just sold this company to this big fund and they gave us a lot of money, and if it's not trademarked, guess what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
Someone's going to say, oh, by the way, this is too close to mine.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what are the next question I have? And I come up with these questions as we go, you know, I don't have a script for specifically this conversation, because there are so many things that interest me. And also talking to other entrepreneurs, I know that are these things interest them. So here's the next question I have. What categories should someone register or trademark? Is that, let's say, for the sake of an example, let's say McDonald's. Is it food and beverage? Is it, you know, restaurants? Is it, what is it? If someone comes up with a business and now they think about, okay, now they know the logo and the name, but also the next question is what categories?
Yeah, well, let me ask you. So let's assume, let's pretend for a moment that you are the most knowledgeable, you, Ali, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That you are the most knowledgeable, most experienced dentist.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Imagine we're having this this call, and I'm like, so Ali, what tooth should I go and fix? Like, you're like, I don't know. I haven't seen your teeth. So right. Same thing with classes. Really, it all boils down to, we need to understand the strategy. We need to understand what business you're trying to build, where you are today, and where do you plan to be 3-5 years from now?
Gotcha.
Because what you said is actually something that a lot of business owners don't understand, is that you don't get a trademark in vacuum. You don't get a monopoly for the name. To stop everybody. Like Apple can't, the company, they can't stop your favorite grocery store from selling apples.
Right.
Because that's not how trademarks work. So they trademarked Apple for very specific list. It's a long list, but it's a specific list of products and services. So when you file your trademark, you have to tell the government, I want this brand in connection with this product, this product, this product, this service, and this service. And they have divided all possible product and services out there into 45 categories. They call them classes. There's 34 classes of physical products and 11 classes of services. So what you do is, if you do it on your own, which again, not a good idea, unless you've been trained to do this. But you ask yourself a question, okay, what's my business? What do I actually sell to the world? We do these services and those services. Is there anything else I might sell onto this brand in the next 2-3 years? Maybe this, maybe that. Okay, good. So now you have a list to work off of, and that's what you go for and trademark. And, you know, by the time it gets approved and allowed, you can remove some classes, but you cannot add to an existing trademark application. So you can make it narrower, but you cannot make it broader after you file. So if you filed, I don't know, in class 25 apparel and I don't know, class 41 for educational services, like maybe you're some infobiz, right? And you sell t-shirts, but then you realize, oh, we will also have an app that will, allow people to connect. That's class 42, right? Or class 9 if it's downloadable. And if you didn't put that in your application, you'll have to file a second trademark for the same thing. It's not a nightmare scenario. You're just going to have two applications. That's how Apple owns over 1,300 trademarks in the U.S. alone. Or wow. Amazon, right? They just keep filing. Interestingly, you would think big companies like this who file hundreds and thousands of trademarks, they're not idiots. They have budgets. If they thought that all these $69 trademarking websites were a good replacement for someone who knows how to file trademarks for real, they would probably be filing all their trademarks through there, but they don't. I wonder why, right? Because they know a thing or two about rejection, and they know that a monkey can file your trademark application. That's easy. It's what happens after that matters, and making sure that what you filed will stick and that you're going to get your registration at the end of the day. So I don't know. I'm kind of jumping from one topic.
That makes complete sense.
You wanted to have a conversation. That's what we're doing, right?
exactly. That's what we want. So the next question is, what about the countries? You know, the region. Let's say I have a business in the U.S. I want to trademark it in the U.S., but I also want it to be protected in Europe. How does that work?
Yeah. So great question. We have four rules of thumb here. You start with your home country always. And home country doesn't mean where you were born. Doesn't mm-hmm. It means where the business is. So you start there. Second layer would be countries where you expect to make noticeable revenue from.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the US, but you're also planning to sell a lot of your stuff in Europe or Canada, that would be your second tier. To me, if you're planning to make at least 30K in that country, it's a no-brainer for you to get a trademark there. If it's significantly less, then it's up for discussion. Mm-hmm. If it's zero, I would say don't bother.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at some point, if you expect that country to give you the revenue, make sure that you can continue selling there, because last thing you want is to have two marketing campaigns, one under one brand and one under the other brand. It's really hard to do. Like Burger King, right? They got Burger King pretty much everywhere except for Australia. They couldn't secure Burger King in Australia, so they're Hungry Jack's there.
Oh, wow.
And so but Burger King has the money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people listening to this interview probably don't.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that if it's a viable market for you, go get a trademark there. Third level is get your trademark wherever you have expenses. Like if you have an office in that country for whatever reason, or if you run targeted ads to that country specifically, and if you spend like 5K a year, it means that you're specifically interested in that country, go get a trademark. And lastly, number four, if you sell physical products and if you make those physical products overseas, get a trademark there. Because even if you don't plan to sell a single item in that country, the fact that you're making it there means you have to export it from there. Mm-hmm. And if someone else trademarks it, they can stop you from exporting your own stuff from mm-hmm. that factory. So like, for example, if you make bikes, right? This is a real story, real life story. Right? You make bikes, you make them in China, and you pay the factory to build, I don't know, a few thousand bikes for you. They put them in a container, and just before they're about to ship them to US for you to start selling them to US, you get a demand letter from a Chinese law firm that says, hey, by the way, we've just confiscated your shipment of counterfeit bikes because your bikes carry our trademark.
Wow.
And that's trademark infringement. What do you want to do about it?
Wow.
Right? And imagine you're a business owner sitting, I don't know, in somewhere in US, right? You get that letter and you just spend shit ton of money to make those bikes. You're sitting there waiting for that container to arrive. You have plants, you have marketing, you have a team ready to sell those bikes. You have probably contracts with some retail stores, and you get that letter and you know that the shipment is not coming. So what do you do? Right? Do you go fight them in a Chinese court? Even if you win, it's going to take a long time. Do you just pay them off, which is going to kill your margins? Do you figure out a way to somehow remove the brand from those bikes that are already in the container? Like there are no good options here. Right? And so in order to prevent that, if you're doing something overseas with physical products, you want to get a trademark there. So that's kind of that's your answer as for where.
Awesome, man. I would never have thought about that. So by the way, does it go by country, or let's say Europe goes by EU?
Yeah, great question. So most yeah, first of all, there's no such thing as a global trademark. Mm-hmm. You have to do it country by country, but there are exceptions, and EU is one of them. Mm-hmm. So while you can get individual European countries trademarked, you can also get one single trademark that's going to cover the entire 27 countries of the European Union. The UK is no longer part of it, so UK right. you have to do separately. But EU, you can do as a single filing. And that makes it very easy. Again, inexpensive, and it covers a huge territory, and it covers a huge market.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Having done this myself in the past, there is, I don't remember the exact phrase, but I remember from the provision patent, that was a patent thing. That was a different,
provisional
okay.
patent.
I'm mixing
yeah.
things up. Okay. So, but my question is, when you, the moment you file for a trademark, do you have some sorts of protection from the, let's say I file today, you file next week.
Yeah.
Do I, and it's probably still not recorded and registered. Do I have some sorts of protection from the moment I file?
Yes. let me kind of give you a detailed answer. The way I look at it, there's like kind of three zones for the brand. Mm-hmm. The first one is a danger zone, is when you have an idea, when you have everything, but you don't have filed trademark application. So before you file, you're in a danger zone.
Right.
Right. It could be you didn't do the search, or you did the search and didn't file, or you started drafting the application and haven't filed it yet. So all of that is danger zone, because you're not officially within the trademarks office's system, right? It's just plain danger to be there. From once you file and before it gets registered, and in different countries, it takes different amount of time. It takes about 12, 14 months in the US, takes about 4 years in Canada now, takes about 8-9 months in Europe. So this is what I call the protection zone. So you're protected, because if you filed, if someone else comes along and files after you, their trademark will probably be rejected, mm-hmm. right? Because you were there first.
Mm-hmm.
But it just protects you from someone else getting a same or similar trademark through the same office. Mm-hmm. Once it gets registered, that's the ownership zone. That's when you actually own it. That's when you can go to court, show them a piece of paper and says, this, it mm-hmm. says that I own it. Mm-hmm. So these are the three zones, right? Danger zone, protection zone, and ownership zone. You want to go from danger zone to protection zone as early as humanly possible. And because at that point you can start building the business, you can start, you know, putting your ads out there, you can start marketing, you can start promoting the brand, knowing that even if somebody wants to copy you and go to the trademarks office to file a similar trademark, you will have the legal tools to stop them and win. The sooner you file, the sooner you get into that protection zone, the sooner you'll end up in the ownership zone.
Right.
Because remember I mentioned investors, right? If you say, well, you know what, we might consider getting investors, I don't know, maybe 6 months from now,
mm-hmm.
Assuming you haven't trademarked your brand, what it means is that you're at least 6 months too late.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you file today and you go to your investor 6 months from now and they do the due diligence report, the best that the lawyers are going to write is they're going to write, well, they filed their trademark applications. They haven't been examined yet. So we don't know if the trademarks office is going to allow it or register it. We think the chances are decent or not decent, but it's still very uncertain. So, you know, mm-hmm. it's heightened risk, lower valuation.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, a lot of people think that trademarks are as quick as domain names, right? You go to some registrar, pay mm-hmm. them $20, and like, hey, you know, I own the domain name. No, with trademarks, you go to the like if you do it yourself, you go to the government website, you fill out a long and incomprehensible web form. It takes you a while. You provide some information. You pay them the government fee. And they say, great, cool, now wait a few months. Mm-hmm. And then you sit and wait and wait and wait. And then they come back to you and say, by the way, what you filed is not good enough. Mm-hmm. It's called an office action when they provide a list of things they don't like about your trademark application. That happens in 81% of trademark applications. They get rejected. 81% for those filed by people who do it on their own, and 68% if you consider everyone who files on their own plus all the trademarks filed through lawyers. So these are not good statistics.
Definitely not.
Definitely like 2/3 to 4/5 of trademarks get rejected. Hmm. And then you fight this office action, you respond, they take a few more months, they get back to you and say, oh, you know what? Thank you for responding. Not good enough. Mm-hmm. We still don't like this and this. And you do this dance, eventually your trademark application either dies or it gets approved. So USPTO statistics, out of all trademark applications filed, with all of them, you know, with all the back and forth that happens, with all the best legal minds involved in responses, 51.7% of trademarks only get approved.
Wow.
Half dies, right? And which is why, to me, what Trademark Factory does, we have a 99.3% rate of success. Like, it's night and day. Like, when we have a trademark that gets denied, we have our big investigation internally trying to figure out what happened, right? How did it happen? Why did it happen? And sometimes, you know, it's, something we did wrong, but usually it's something that, you know, we just disagree with what the trademarks office does because there's a human there, mm-hmm. but at a certain point, like, there's nothing we can do. So what we do is we just give the client all their money back. Mm-hmm. We're the only firm in the world that does that, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so, it happens, but it happens very rarely for us. But this is the reality. Half of trademarks filed get denied. Mm-hmm. So I don't even remember what question I'm answering, to be honest.
You're good. So, and when you do a search, not me, not anyone else, when you as a pro do a search and someone has filed, let's say 2, 3, 4, 5 months ago, are you able to find that someone has already filed but has not been approved yet?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yes. Okay. And that's the difference between what's called a comprehensive trademark search and a knockout search. Mm. We'll find not only stuff that was filed and approved and not yet approved, we'll find synonyms, we'll find soundalikes, we'll find lookalikes, we'll find translations, we'll find stuff with different suffixes, different prefixes, because that's what the trademarks mm-hmm. office is going to do. And that's why all those websites, they tell you, hey, you know, do a quick free search and find out in 20 seconds whether your brand is trademark. It's just garbage. Mm-hmm. because at best, you're going to know if you came up with something that's identical to someone else, and that's useful to a certain degree. But relying on this, if you didn't find anything, is dangerous as hell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, man. Of course. Now I have the burning question. How much? how much usually does it take for someone? What is the investment that someone is looking at? Let's say they're not Apple. They're not McDonald's. But somebody that, you know, is starting a decent business. They believe in it. They know it's going to be something they really want to build and grow. And now they want to know, okay, how much do I need to invest in this?
Yeah. So when I was figuring out Trademark Factory, when I came up with the idea of Trademark Factory, I had this picture in my head. When Bill Gates goes to McDonald's, if he goes to McDonald's, they will not sell him Big Mac at 10 times the price just because he's got more money.
Right.
Right? he's just going to pay for the same amount for the Big Mac as you or I would pay if we went to McDonald's. So I wanted to make the pricing for trademarking services really easy, because you don't know, you don't really care how easy or difficult it's going to be for us to get your trademark. Right. All you care about as a business owner is, did I get it or did I not get it? To you, it's binary. And it's impossible for you to really compare who's a better trademark attorney, who's worse trademark, because you have no idea.
Right?
And really, you shouldn't get into this. So the vision that I had was, how do we turn trademarking services that everyone tries to say, well, you know, it's so difficult, and if this happens, then you're going to pay that, and if that happens, you're going to pay this. Like, if you go to a law firm, you ask them for a schedule of fees, they're going to send you two pages of, oh, you know, filing is this, but if this happens, then it's this, and it's this, and it's this, and it's that, and you're going to have this people reviewing it. And like, this is bullshit, because most people have no idea how much they're going to end up paying. So what I wanted to do is, I wanted to figure out, how can we give entrepreneurs trademark registration services for a with a guaranteed result for a guaranteed budget? And how do we have a model that allows us to be profitable, but also makes it a no-brainer of an offer for those clients who don't know if their trademark is going to go through? And so sometimes we're going to make great money, sometimes we're going to lose money just because of the sheer amount of work that we need to pay attorneys for. And so we have three packages. One of them is by far the most popular, so that's the one I'm going to talk about. It's called All Inclusive, and it's $3K plus the government fee. So $3K, and it covers everything. It covers the search. First thing we do the search. And if we tell you, hey, your trademark is problematic, you can take your $3K back and pretend we never had a conversation. Or you can give us five more options or 10 more options until you pick the brand that you love, and that we tell you this one would work, right? And then we're going to file for that one. And then we're going to file your trademark. If we get an office action, we're going to respond to that office action. If there's some back and forth, guess what's not going to happen? We're not going to go back to you and say, Ali, by the way, so, you know, really sorry, trademarks office, they got this idiot of an examiner, and they just wrote this horrible office action. We disagree with it. We're happy to respond to it. Give us more money. And that's not going to happen with Trademark Factory, because we're like, hey, we got this office action. Don't worry. You paid for it. We're dealing with it. Right. And we had situations, I think our record was like 7 years. I think that's our longest one, with constant back and forth. Like, I can't imagine how much money we spend on that file. And the guy got it, right? Didn't have to pay an extra dime. And if after all of this back and forth, your trademark still doesn't go through, you get your $3K back. You know, we actually just had one yesterday. And this was one after, I think, like 6 or 7 months when we had the one before that. And it's upsetting, of course. And, you know, my team was like, wow, you know, we did all this thing for the guy, and we responded and we tried, and the trademark examiner is an idiot. Like, and I said, well, so what? That's the whole promise around Trademark Factory. We tried, we didn't give them the result that they paid for, give them the money back, right? So that's what your $3K buys you. Alternatively, yeah, you can, you know, file your trademark yourself. You can go with a law firm. You can go with a $69 website. But if you want to get your brand trademarked, and if you want to know exactly how much the whole thing is going to cost you, and if you want to know that people who deal with your brand actually give a damn, and that you have a money back guarantee, we're the only ones who can do that for you.
That's great to know, man. And so what are the government fees approximately?
Yeah, government fees did depend on the country. So I'm assuming U.S. Right. So it's $350 per class. We spoke about classes briefly. So you multiply that 350 by the number of classes that you're filing in. But the good thing about trademarks, it's the only type of IP that can last forever. Everything else expires. Copyright expires, patent expires. Trademarks, they don't. I mean, you have to renew them every 10 years. But in theory, you can have your trademark. For my favorite example is Coca-Cola. They filed their first trademark in 1892, and they're still renewing that same trademark. And speaking of one of the questions you asked me, when do you file your trademark? 1892, Coca-Cola sells 9 drinks a day.
Wow.
It's a freaking lemonade stand with a dream.
Right.
Right. But they knew that if we are going to bother building a company that that sells those drinks, if we're going to bother, you know, doing something, the whole thing is not going to be about the drink. It's going to be about the brand. And now their brand is worth $80 billion. And it's the most valuable asset they got. Not their factories, not their workers, not their recipe, not the brand. Right. And they've been renewing that same trademark since 1892.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's very interesting. Do you get to work with clients worldwide that, you know, want to trademark, or are you focused on a specific region, let's say North America and Europe?
Yeah, I mean, the vast majority is North America, US, Canada. Mm-hmm. We do have some clients from other places, but they're rare. Most of the trademarks we file are in US and Canada. We do file in the EU. We do file in Australia. We do file, you know, China when we need to. But that's the beauty of the model, because the way I see it, you know, we're not about us being the best trademark attorneys. We're not. Like, I can't be an attorney in every country.
Right.
And I don't want to. So my role, when I say my role, not Andre's role, the company's role is to be some sort of a combination between an insurance company and a customer experience company. Our role is to make sure that the person who handles your trademark does it well, and that they don't screw you over. And that if something happens along the way, you are not the one who ends up paying for it, right? And that makes us pick the best providers, and because we understand trademarks better than, you know, most people out there, when we have conversations with attorneys, whether it's in Europe or in Australia or in China, we speak the same language. Like, I know all the tricks. Like, you know, I know what they can do. And so we ask them all those questions. And if we get answers that we don't like, we're like, okay, great. Screw you. We're going to find someone who's going to give us a better answer. Or we won't work with you. Right. And that's not what you'd get if you were just, you know, trying to get to those attorneys directly. Like the guy we're using, we're using one of the best attorneys in the U.S. for filing U.S. trademarks. And a lot of people are like, well, why don't I just find out who you use and go directly to him? I said, sure, you can do that. You're not going to get a guarantee. You're not going to get our rates that we get. And you're not going to get the treat, because as clients of Trademark Factory, you get a human available to you 24/7 pretty much. And you don't have to pay for it, right? That's not your experience with attorneys, even the ones that we use, because with him, like we know exactly, we have a great relationship, love the guy to bits, right? And if I gave you his name, you'd get a very different deal going directly with him compared to what you get with us. So,
yeah, because you're also bringing volume to him, I believe. You know, it's a
we bring volume, and we take a lot of his work,
right?
From him, because he doesn't need to communicate with clients. He doesn't need to explain them stuff. He doesn't need to bill them. He doesn't need to collect, like, none of that garbage, right? We take all this. He doesn't have to explain to them, well, you know, I'm sorry it didn't go through. It's my headache, not his headache, right? That makes a big difference.
Makes complete sense to me, Matt. And I also, you know, when I, client's perspective, looking at this, I'm like, hey, I don't want to be the expert. I want to understand it, why I need to do it, and how it's going to be done. That's why I'm asking all these questions. What are the steps when someone comes? But do I want to become the expert? No, I don't. Do I want to focus on my business? Of course I want, you know. So let me pay someone who takes care and who takes this off this weight off my shoulder so I can go and focus on what I'm really focused on, which is my business.
Yeah. You know? And look, 3K, I understand it's, you know, it's not nothing. It's, mm-hmm. it's a substantial amount of money. But so is your business. Like, imagine how much money you're going to spend if this is not done well. You're going to waste your money on the branding. You're going to waste, like, we buy phones that cost almost as much.
Right.
And there are things that we really shouldn't cut corners on, mm-hmm. because that's gonna bite us in the ass in the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Trademarks is one of them, right? How you set up your company is important. How you protect your, like, I actually am putting together a list. This is a video that's going to go live on our channel soon, about 10 things that you got to do if you want to have a successful business, right? You got to have an offer that people, you got to be selling something people want to buy. And, you know, if you came up with an idea that nobody cares about, it doesn't matter what your brand is, you're going to fail, mm-hmm. right? You got to have a good offer. You got to have this and this and this and this. But the important thing here is that there are things that need to be done right. Like, you need to have a profitable business model. That's another thing. And that's the lesson I learned the hard way, because we all fall in love with some metrics that are really vanity metrics. And then you realize, how come we just had what seems to be our best month, but we sort of have no money in the bank. Like, right. How did that happen? Mm-hmm. Right. At some point you realize, I wish somebody who actually knew this stuff told me about this when I was building it, because if I had this great month and I had a great foundation, that would have allowed me to make that big step that I was hoping for, rather than I have to now go and fix everything. Right. Same thing with trademarks. So like I said, 3K, if you're serious about your business, if you're serious about building a brand, it's an investment that your business is going to thank you for. Mm-hmm. That's really, again, I'm not here to sell our service. If you don't like me, if you don't like Trademark Factory, go get it somewhere else. That's right. Fine. But if you say that you're serious about your business, if you're serious about your brand, go get your brand trademarked somewhere. And you know, if you want to go get it through us, well, you can do it at trademarkfactory.com. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome, man. So I really enjoyed this conversation. And I, to be honest with you, I didn't plan it that it would go that direction, which I'm glad it did. I actually wanted to talk about your story as an immigrant entrepreneur who has traveled the world and still does. But we got into that discussion, and I'm really glad we did, because I believe there is tremendous value that our audience is going to get from that. So, absolutely. Really, really enjoyed that conversation. I definitely think we would have you come back on the show sometime in the future, because I'm sure we're going to get tons of questions. So maybe we can schedule Part that two. In the future. Please sure. Don't go anywhere when we end. I need to talk to you off camera for a couple of minutes. And yeah, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for taking the time coming on the show. So you just said where people can find you, and we will link you up in the show notes, so people can also find your company and your email address and everything. And yeah, man, thank you so much for coming on the show. Спасибо.
Sure. Спасибо.